Hello, I'm Miranda.
And I'm Lucas.
And welcome to another special Halloween edition of That Jorvik Viking Thing podcast. Once again, we'll be reading another spooky story filled with trepidation, ghosts, and ghouls. Each story will be recorded live and read from the spooky tome. This is episode 2, and if you missed the first one, use the link in the description to go back and catch up.
As the world took its first steps into modernity, and the old religion was swept away from England, a new age of reason and enlightenment began, or at least that's what they would have you believe. This time of science and philosophy was also a time of the occult, of sorcery and witches, whose familiars and demons of hell seemed to have plagued the godly Protestant folk of this land, causing inexplicable phenomena to occur. What follows now is a true story of haunting, malefic magic, and witchcraft. And so without further pause, here is tonight's tale, The Invisible Drummer.
In Viking times, a thing was a gathering, a place where leaders and warriors could meet and talk.
In the 21st century, our thing is a virtual place where history academics and enthusiasts from around the world can come together to share knowledge. We're your hosts, Miranda Schmiederer
and Lucas Norton. So hold on to your helmets for this episode of That Jorvik Viking Thing podcast.
This tale concerns a haunting which occurred at the house of a certain gentleman by the name of Mr. John Mompesson, who lived in the town of Tedworth. He was one day conducting business in a neighbouring town where he encountered an alarmingly loud and repetitive nuisance of a noise which caused a most unwelcome distraction from his affairs. So he inquired with the town bailiff as to the source and cause of this annoyance. It transpired that the town had been troubled for several days by an idle drummer who rudely beat upon his instrument whilst falsely declaring that he was owed a sum of money by the town constable. Mr. Mompesson summoned the idle drummer before him and inquired as to whose authority the drummer went about with his instruments, producing such a racket, to which the drummer presented papers with a warrant that he claimed were written in the hands of respectable local men of the gentry and officers. However, Mr. Mompesson instantly realised that these papers were counterfeits, so he immediately charged the constable to carry away this vagrant drummer before a justice of the peace for punishments, and he ordered that the drum be confiscated. The drummer begged leave to keep possession of his drum, but it was decided that the drum would remain temporarily confiscated. The drummer grew most angry and bitter at this answer, angrily shouting foul words of abuse at the gathered gentlemen, informing them that they shall rue the day that they parted him from his beloved instruments. He was swiftly dragged away by the bailiff, whilst Mr. Mompesson resumed conducting his business before returning to his house with the confiscated drum in hand. Soon after this, he departed for a brief visit to the capital, leaving the aforementioned drum secure within his household. And when he returned, he found the household in a state of great distress, for at night, when the family and servants had retired to their chambers, great crashing noises had been heard downstairs, and the rooms were broken up in great disarray. 3 nights later, Mr. Mompesson heard the same noises return, a great repetitive knocking noise upon the doors and on the outside of the house. He loaded his pistols and went downstairs, aiming his weapons towards the door where the knocking was most violent, ready to shoot the wretched criminal. But when he opened the door, there was no one there, and the noise instantly transferred to another door upon the other side of the house, where once again, nothing was to be found. The noise of thumping and drumming continued for a long time, striking upon the roof of the house, until eventually it stopped. The drumming on the house's exterior continued each night for a month, but then the noises began to instead emanate from the interior, specifically the chamber where the confiscated drum lay. beating away for hours. Mr. Mompesson would on occasion lie within this room in order to observe the phenomena but could find no cause or explanation for the noises. The drumming was more a nuisance and a hindrance of sleep than anything else. But 3 weeks later, events took a more violent and unsettling turn. Whatever entity caused this noise began to take an interest in the children of the household, haunting their rooms by beating upon their bedsteads with such violence that it was feared the beds would collapse and injure the children. Then, a disturbing scratching noise would emanate from beneath their beds, as if iron talons scraped upon the wood. And after this, the children would rise up out of their beds, carried by unseen hands. And on one autumn night, a servant observed two wooden boards being torn with invisible force from a piece of furniture within a child's room, which caused him to utter, "Pray, let me have it in my hand," which resulted in the boards suddenly moving towards him with great force, striking him repeatedly, alarming many witnesses. That night's haunting immediately ceased after this, though upon the spirit's departure, the room was engulfed in a foul, sulphurous aroma which was considered to be most offensive. Later, some neighbours came to visit, led by a local minister, who asked that the gathering kneel together in prayer in the room where the hauntings were most troublesome. And it seemed as if the good minister had succeeded in banishing the entity, for the incessant thumping and drumming departed the room in response to the holy words, retreating into the loft where its muffled, distant noises could just be heard. Most unfortunately, however, the minute the prayers concluded, the door opened, and the spirit clearly returned to its mischief as the chairs began to walk around the room by themselves, followed by all other pieces of loose furniture. The children's shoes were hurled across the room, through the air by invisible hands, and a bedstaff was propelled through the chamber at the minister, which struck him upon the leg, though thankfully he was unharmed. It was immediately decided that the children should be sent away to lodge with a trusted neighbour, as the hauntings had taken on such an alarmingly violent turn for the worst. In the children's absence, the less aggressive nighttime drumming and knocking resumed. But eventually, the children had to return to their home, and upon their arrival, the spirits began to delight in all sorts of cruel and petty tricks. It would slam doors upon people, causing sore bruises. It would tug at hair and clothing, and would hide possessions, displaying a particular dislike for Bibles. Servants found themselves lifted up from their beds, or alternatively, pinned down against the mattress, as if some great weight lay upon them. Though one serving man, by the name of John, discovered that the spirits would depart his chamber whenever the man reached for his sword in the night, as if the entity were afraid of the blade, though it would on occasion attempt to wrestle his sword away from him. When winter arrived, a strange, musical voice was heard within the chimney, and extraordinary lights were seen within the house, which were bright blue and glimmering and caused great discomfort if observed directly. Footsteps were heard treading softly up and down the stairs in the night, whilst doors slammed open and shut incessantly. During a gathering of neighbours at the house, one gentleman in the company commanded the spirits, "Devil, if the drummer set thee to work, give 3 knocks and no word. Then give 5 knocks and no more this night." And the spirit complied, beating 3 times, then 5 times, and remaining quiet throughout the remainder of the night. And this was observed by many witnesses. A few days after this, shortly before dawn, Mr. Mompesson heard a great noise beneath the room where the children lay. So he ran down with a loaded pistol in hand and heard a loud voice shout out, "A witch! A witch!" But the room was silent and empty when he arrived. The next night, the spirits began panting like a large dog, causing rooms that it entered to become excessively hot despite the cold winter weather. and the rooms became filled with noxious, sulfurous aromas. It was decided that ashes should be scattered upon the floor to observe the size and the shape of the spirit's feet. And come morning, there were numerous prints which resembled those of a great clawed beast. Whilst many letters were also scratched into the ashes, though in a script and language that no Englishman could decipher. Mr. Mompesson then observed logs of wood begin to move and rise within the fireplace of their own will, so he promptly loaded a pistol and discharged a shot at said logs, which disturbingly sprayed scattered droplets of blood upon shattering. But this calmed the hauntings for a period of time, though this also evidently angered the spirits. It entered a servant's room soon after this and appeared as an apparition for the first time. It was too dark to make out its shape or form, but it was exceedingly large and in possession of two red, glaring eyes which fixed upon the man in anger before vanishing. Mr. Mompesson regularly encountered apparitions of seven or eight dark figures entering his chambers at night, though he quickly observed that a single shot from his pistol was enough to frighten away the spectres. The children then began levitating in their beds with such forcefulness that the strength of six men was unable to lower them back. Chamber pots were emptied upon sleeping folk by the spirits, and dangerous, sharp objects like iron pikes and kitchen knives were hidden within bedding, clearly intending to maim the household. Word of the haunting spread throughout England, though many folk were sceptical and believed some trickery or tomfoolery were at work in Mr. Mompesson's house, which led a gentleman by the name of Mr. Glanville and his associate Mr. Hill to arrive at the house and investigate the true nature of these occurrences. The gentleman observed a strange scratching noise from behind the children's beds, as loud a scratching as long nails could possibly make. But behind the beds, nothing was to be seen. While searching the room for any sign of trickery, an invisible, loud, panting noise emanated from beneath the beds, so loud that the room and its windows shook violently, though no creature could be seen lurking beneath the beds. While sleeping in the house that night, Mr. Glanville encountered a knock at his door, to which he asked, "In the name of God, who is it, and what would you have?" To which a deep, rasping voice answered, "Nothing with you." Mr. Glanville and his associate were persuaded, based upon what they had observed, that there truly was a spirit, or worse, a demon from hell, at work in that house. But people were now asking, where on earth had this entity come from, and whether it was sent by some evil person? So a man was dispatched to find the vagrant drummer, who had ended up jailed in the city of Gloucester for thievery. And it was reported that the drummer inquired whether there was any news from the town of Tedworth. When the visitor had none to deliver, the drummer angrily blurted out, "No news? Do you not hear of the gentleman's house that was troubled with the beating of drums? I have plagued him because he took my drum from me, and he shall not have his quiet again until I have my drum or satisfaction from him." This surprising outburst was viewed by many as a confession of witchcraft. So the drummer was then put on trial, for it was illegal to find, feed, employ, or reward any evil spirits. The court was presented with eyewitness accounts by respectable gentlemen of these hauntings, as well as reports that in his youth, the drummer did associate with a known warlock, whom had bequeathed arcane and unsavory books unto him. The court was merciful, however, and the drummer was sentenced to transportation rather than death, packed onto a ship bound for the New World. And with this, the drummings and the haunting ceased, as if the spirit or demon was sent abroad too. There were, however, rumours that the ship sank before it reached the colonies, struck by an unnatural storm, conjured by magic, and that some of the criminals had escaped and even made it back to England. But this, of course, is just idle gossip. Though it was also said that a faint drumming noise soon resumed in a certain gentleman's house. A tapping, a thumping, a drumming sound which sleepers found most disturbing. But this tale has disturbed us far enough for tonight, so let us end this bizarre and haunting account.
I have no rhythm. That could have been better, sorry. So that was a pretty spooky and or weird story, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's a theme here. Lots of weird episodes
yeah,
in a row.
Yeah. I mean, like, it was, there were scary aspects of it, but there was also, you know, farting, so.
Well, it wasn't described as, I think it was the smell of hell. I don't think it was a bum burp.
Okay, so tell us about this story. Where does this come from?
Okay, so the source for this particular story, it's a book from published in the 18th century with one of those great 18th century names that just covers an entire page. The title is The Complete Wizard, being a collection of authentic and entertaining narratives of the real existence and appearance of ghosts, demons, and spectres, together with several wonderful instances of the effects of witchcraft, etc., to which is prefixed an account of haunted houses, and subjoined a treatise on the effects of magic.
That is snappy.
Yes. So that was published back in 1770. The book itself, it looks like a creepy old book as well. Like it's come out of the library in Buffy the Vampire Slayer or something. And there's even a lovely poem at the start of it on the first page.
Please read us the poem, if you would.
Whatever of wonders, great and strange, the hidden worlds produce, we now in ample order range, O reader, for thy use.
I mean, they're like laying it on thick. They're telling you exactly what this book is going to be, aren't they?
Yeah. And it's laid out very nicely in this text as well. It's a compilation of what it claims are true stories of the supernatural, which took place across the 17th and 18th centuries. They even subdivide and categorize them into haunted houses, ghosts, spectres and apparitions, witches and witchcraft, demons and demonic possession, dreams and prophecies, as well as magic.
I love it. It's almost like a reference guide. Like, okay, I need to read about apparitions. So yeah. Here's the section, you know.
It's very scientific, this book of nonsense. Yes.
I mean, okay, so you mentioned magic. Does it have like magic spells in it?
Yeah, would you like to hear some magic spells?
100% I would.
Okay, so if you want to learn who your future husband will be, you need to get the egg white from a freshly laid egg. Put this in a beer glass and expose it to the sun in hot weather in August, when the sun is in Leo, then you will dream your future husband's profession.
That is like a lot of work. You can only do it in August.
Yes.
And then it's not even who your future husband is. It's just like, oh, he's a carpenter. So is that it? Is that the only spell in there?
So another great one, which involves the word abracadabra. This one is to expel disease. You must write the word abracadabra upon a piece of parchment. You cut it into the shape of an upside-down pyramid, and you write out the word abracadabra again and again, but every time you remove one letter from the end. You then tie this parchment around your neck, and the disease will shrink away just as the word abracadabra shrinks on the parchments.
That's not exactly, you know, like, we kids use abracadabra today. That's not exactly as, like, magical and
yeah.
fun as you would expect it to be.
Specifically for a toothache, we've got a much more specific cure here. To cure toothache, take a newly forged nail and make the gum bleed with it. Then drive the nail into an oak tree.
You know, I'm not convinced these are real magic, you know.
So you need a blacksmith's help. You get tetanus and you've got to desecrate a tree.
Perfect.
And also to cure a child of thrush, take a living frog, not a dead one, and hold its head inside the child's mouth until the frog dies.
Oh no!
Then repeat with another frog.
How many frogs have you got to kill?
It doesn't specify. I don't know if you just need to do the two or if you keep doing it until it's cured.
Until the
thrush
goes
away. You fulfill your course of antibiotics, something like that. So there's a lot and lot of weird stuff in this book, but it's all true. The title page says so. Everything here is 100% legit.
True. Perfect. Yeah. Well, okay, so our story, The Invisible Drummer, what section does that come in?
Haunted houses, right at the start of it. It's the very first spooky story in the book. And it's actually quite famous as well. It's even got a Wikipedia page as well. Ooh. The Drummer of Tedworth. So look us up if you want to learn some more. So this is a 100% true story of a poltergeist manifestation in the town of Tedworth in Wiltshire. So this occurred during the 17th century, but the story became very well known and was retold, reprinted and discussed throughout the 17th, 18th and 19th centuries. It even pops up in Samuel Pepys's diary as well. His wife read the story to him.
Oh, that's nice.
So, sweet dream, Samuel. Here's a ghost story. So this time period, the 17th, 18th century, the Stuart or Georgian periods, this is a time of revolution in scientific understanding and philosophy. So people start to get a bit sceptical about the supernatural, though undoubtedly lots of people still believed in witches, ghosts and demons, because of course stuff like witch trials was still going on around this time as well.
So, I mean, did people think this story had actually happened then?
So this story had a mixed reception at the time. There was, of course, a lot of scepticism surrounding it. So I find it quite interesting that this particular version of it, it feels like a modern paranormal investigation, I think.
It does
doesn't
a bit,
it?
Does, yeah.
So the writer of this book clearly wants you to believe this is truly a supernatural event, which definitely happened. So it's very meticulous in listing the dates when all these different phenomena occur. On multiple occasions, it says, multiple witnesses observed this. And there was that part where it was Mr. Glanville and Mr. Hill investigate the haunted bedroom.
Yeah.
So it feels like one of those cheesy TV shows. Do you remember back in the 2000s?
Yeah, where everything's like in that that night vision, like green, you know?
Yeah, and they sort of see orbs flying past the digital camera. Never see a ghost, though, for some reason. Not sure what that's about. They kind of go, was that a noise? It's definitely a ghost. So it's kind of like an early modern version of that, I suppose.
Yeah.
So lots of people in this period, they were not convinced it was a true story at all. They thought maybe there is a less supernatural explanation for this drumming noise and the scratching noises that we hear. So some people suggested the drummer, who this suggests is a witch, of course, who summoned a familiar or a demon to do this. The drummer's just a trickster. Maybe he was just tapping the outside of the house.
I mean, that's a fair point, yeah.
It sounds a lot more plausible, doesn't it, than a sort of spooky apparition moving around making noises. And also things like the funny lights, the sort of the shape seen in the dark, that's just their imaginations. They're just a bit spooked, getting a bit overactive, I suppose. Some blame the kids as well. And I guess the kids could have made scratching noises, couldn't they, under the bed? Going, oh, look, Mum, there's a ghost under the bed. Scratch, scratch, scratch.
I think they might have been a little bit harder pressed to levitate, though.
Yeah, it's not a Vegas show, is it, for a magician? So I'm not sure how to explain the levitation besides just lies, well, I guess. Interestingly, though, the hauntings, they lessened when the children left, didn't they?
They did, but then they brought the kids back. They were like, oh, actually, they do need to be here after all.
Yeah.
Let's bring them back to this hellhole.
I even found there's a Georgian play which adapted this story as well, called The Drummer. They change it quite a lot, though, the characters within it, and they outright say it's all a trick. There's no ghost in this at all. In this version of the story, the man of the house is believed to have died in battle. So other men try to seduce his widow. But he, of course, is not dead. He makes spooky drumming noises to scare away these men. Then he goes, darling, I'm alive after all.
Do you know what would have been easier than all of that?
Yeah.
Him just telling them that he wasn't dead.
It was a different time.
The drumming was entirely unnecessary. So, I mean, okay. It doesn't really mention ghosts. Like you said, this was like a demon familiar, right? So it's not a ghost story. Did they believe in ghosts?
All
this
phenomenon, we would go, oh, it's a ghost, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Spooky noises, apparitions, but it's not really clear if ghosts should exist in this period. So we've left the medieval world behind us. We no longer are Catholic in England. We don't believe in purgatory anymore. We're good Protestant folk now in the 17th and 18th century, and we believe in heaven, hell, and nothing else because the Bible doesn't say anything else about this sort of thing. Therefore, ghosts shouldn't exist. They're not possible in the kind of Protestant imagination. So these poltergeists, these spooky phenomenon, they must either be caused by witches sending their creatures called witches familiars or demons from hell. Because, of course, those exist. Ghosts are nonsense. But a witch is familiar. Yeah, definitely. So they are not the spirits of dead people. They're just horrible oogly booglies from the underworld.
I mean, so it kind of sounds like it was a bit of a transitional period, really. Like, people didn't want to believe in ghosts, but it was still quite a commonly accepted sort of thing, really.
Yeah, it's a point where we were leaving the medieval world behind, but still had a foot left in that, I suppose. And we're moving into the modern world with a foot in that world as well. And so we had this clash of the traditional ideas along with the new ideas about science, the supernatural, the world and the universe around us. There's all this new scientific knowledge, new philosophies, and new religious ideas as well. Of course, Christianity begins to splinter in all sorts of different directions as well now. And it was not a quick and easy transition at all. So in the 18th century, the Georgian period, we have got people like Isaac Newton writing papers on gravity and the laws of motion. We're also putting witches on trial at the same time
it
as well.
It does feel really contradictory, doesn't it?
So it's a bit of a clash, a very murky mix of all sorts of beliefs. And we might laugh about that, go, oh, those silly people in the 17th and 18th century. But we're still grappling with this today. So most of us have pretty good, robust scientific educations from school. But a lot of us still believe in ghosts and the supernatural, and we might not believe in witches, familiars anymore, but we've replaced these with more modern types of supernatural phenomenon like UFOs and aliens.
True.
Yeah.
So, do you think it's a true story?
Well, they did have that investigation, and they were very thorough. Multiple witnesses observed it. And we even have the calendar breaking down day by day, so the evidence is clear, I think. I think it is a true story. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Clearly, a witch with a drum sent a spooky, scratchy drumming monster to torment them and levitate the kids for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And create inexplicable smells.
Yes. All the smells. So this is quite a fun, spooky story, wasn't it? Do you think you can top this one in our next episode?
I 100% can top it, because I'm going to take us way back in history. I'm going to do a Roman story.
Oh, back to the classical world.
Very classic. But, like, you know, I'm thinking less supernatural, more like monster-y.
Oh,
you know?
I can't wait to hear that one. If you liked this episode, you should go visit our new coffee shop at Barley Hall in Coffee Yard on the Snickle Way between Swinegate and Stonegate, where you can enjoy drinks and light snacks. Each of the tables in the coffee shop will feature artifacts from our collection relating to historic coffee culture. And anyone wanting to find out more can access fun videos via their mobile phone to delve deeper into this fascinating part of York's Georgian coffeehouse scene.
Don't forget to rate and review That Jorvik Viking Thing podcast on your podcast app. And if you enjoyed the show, share us with a friend. It's the best way to help support your favorite history podcast. To contact us for more information or ideas for future episodes, you can email us on podcast@yorkat.co.uk.
Thanks for listening to That Jorvik Viking Thing podcast. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other major podcast platforms.
That Jorvik Viking Thing podcast is a production of the Jorvik Group and York Archaeology, hosted by Miranda Schmiederer and Lucas Norton.
Researched by Lucas Norton, produced by Miranda Schmiederer, Lucas Norton, and Gareth Henry.
Sound designed and edited by Miranda Schmiederer.